Insight on Business the NewsHour is made possible through the support of Focus and Find, helping you turn human resources into a profit zone rather than an expense. Focusandfind.com.
Welcome back to Insight on Business the NewsHour. Gratefully, you're listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to be. With me is a returning guest. As a matter of fact, the last time I spoke with Abana Imhotep was way back in 2019, and we had a discussion about making every Friday a Black Friday. It's called Economic Development. She is a writer, producer, consultant, and educator, and I love this woman because she is so real. And we're going to be talking about her latest book and other things that she's doing. Abana, welcome to the Business News Hour again.
Thank you, Michael. It's my pleasure to be here.
So your husband is waiting for you, I understand,
right? He is.
Right.
He's always waiting for me. That's kind of the story of his life.
I think that's just so
You know,
funny.
I read somewhere that we spend a third of our lives waiting in line. I think he spent half of our marriage waiting for me.
And Nick has recently finished his doctorate.
He has, yes. He got his doctorate in business administration.
Yes.
And so now he's Dr. Neguse.
Dr. Neguse. Very good. All right. Let's dig into this. You have written this book about Omari's Big Tree and Mighty Djembe.
Yeah. Omari's Big Tree and the Mighty Djembe is a story that kind of came to me. It's a story that came to me. That's actually a really good way to put it.
How?
Well, I was blessed to have grandchildren, and one of my grandsons has autism, and he has a sensory stimulant where he needs to have one thing in each hand all
really?
The time. Yeah. So when I go over to play with them and spend time with them, he will grab my dreadlocks, and that's his one thing in each hand,
oh.
Right? So this story is about a little boy who wants to play the drum, and he takes drumsticks with him everywhere he goes. And so that is my nod to my grandson, is the one thing in each hand.
Yes.
Omari's drumsticks.
Really?
Yeah.
So give us an overview of what the book is about.
Sure thing. So a little boy who lives in a community similar to any community in the country.
Right.
He, again, has this desire to play the drums, but he doesn't have a drum. And then there is a storm that happens in his community called a derecho.
Yeah. Well, aren't we familiar with that?
We ought to be, right? And so his community experiences a derecho, and the story really is about how he learns about himself and his family and his culture through that experience of surviving a derecho. And so without giving too much away, it's the story of a little boy whose gifts are not only in his hands and what he can tangibly hold, but what he holds in his heart as well.
Got it. You know, these types of stories, these feel-good stories, I might say, are so important for us to hear, especially right now. By the way, I need to ask, has your book been banned?
No, okay. It has not been banned. And I wrote this book particularly.
I'm just asking because, you know, there are some of those things going
on. Oh, yeah. I've got book two coming, and that one will probably be banned. But this book, as I said, inspired by my grandchildren, inspired by our community that we live in, inspired by the fact that there are so many children's books available
yes.
now that are rooted in trauma.
Yes.
And I felt like I wanted to contribute to a child's bookshelf, but not in a story rooted in trauma.
Yes.
So this is a story rooted in community, in family, and friendship.
And how important, again, that is for kids to be associated with right now.
Absolutely. I think it's important for our children to understand that they have a say. They have something they can contribute, and their little voices are more powerful than they could possibly imagine.
And that is so true. All right. So the book is one thing that you've been doing. You're also a recent graduate of Drake University. Congratulations.
I am.
Is there nothing you don't do? Also, You're a podcaster, and I want to dive into this a little bit. What is it that you talk about, Abhinav?
Yeah, well, my podcast is called Black and Privileged in America Podcast.
Wait.
Yeah.
Now that's, those are some words, when you put them together, immediately cause somebody to go, what?
Yeah.
Black and privileged?
Absolutely.
Talk to us.
Black and privileged. Well, in a way, it's a double entendre.
Oh,
so,
yes.
Yeah, we don't typically associate black with privilege. The fact is, in comparison, you know, if we were to compare, and I even hate to start that way, because it's not a comparison on struggle, you know, who struggles the worst.
Right.
That's not the goal here. But the fact is that if we stand side by side to some of our counterparts, of course, black people would be at a disadvantage. It's data, it's historical, it's data, it's fact. However, and all of us have a measure of privilege wherever we are. And so the idea behind the title of my podcast is to say that, yes, I am black in America, and I want to examine what advantages I have and what advantages I can wield when it is relevant to black people, when it would benefit black people. So power conversations, love conversations, and money conversations, where we can uplift and somehow cast advantage to the black community.
So your book and your podcast are not divergent at all.
Not at all.
They are symbiotic with regard to hope and culture and a better understanding, yeah?
I'd like to think so. Hope is always a word that I grapple with.
Mm.
It almost seems violent to have hope when things seem hopeless. But I'll go ahead and say hope today. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that.
The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day. So, yes, there's hope.
So the podcast, Black and Privilege, and how long have you been doing this?
We launched the podcast with the Amplify DSM platform in 2020. We went live in 2021. We did some transition. And
right during the pandemic, too.
During the pandemic. It was the perfect time to have a conversation, particularly when the pandemic ravaged poor communities and non-white communities across the country and in Iowa. It was a great time to have those conversations in a way that we weren't confined or bound.
Yeah. Yeah, we saw monumental increases in our listenership during the pandemic, and that's continued, but mostly because people were searching for things to do. And we don't do politics on the Business News Hour. We stick traditionally to the business world, because there's so much out there that goes on. And from time to time, we do dip our toe into politics if there's a business connection of some kind. But I think that podcasting as a whole, and you know how difficult this is. I mean, this is not an easy job to sit down and script things out and get ready to go. And you know, I suspect that maybe you have somebody doing your editing for you.
Yeah, we have a great team at Amplified. We have a media coordinator. We have producers. We have editors. So really, it's made easy in terms of all of that stuff. But to have the kinds of conversations we have, it's really tough. It's a commitment. It's a place, kind of like when I wrote my book, I made a commitment to tell the children the truth.
Yes.
And so in my podcast, I made a commitment to speak the truth.
That's all we can do on a regular basis. Abhinav Imhotep is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. She last appeared with us back in January of 2019. It's been way too long, my dear. We talked about the book. We've talked about your podcast. You're also a consultant.
I am.
Talk to us about that.
I told someone a while back, you know, they said, well, it seems like you do so many things. I'm like, actually, I just do one thing.
Right.
I am a consultant in terms of, you know, some of the buzzwords that are out there now, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, those are hot-button words and issues right now. So I consult businesses, organizations, public and private, with their concerns around equity and inclusion, and really how to be good humans and what that means to the bottom line.
This is such an issue that's fraught with all kinds of issues. I mean, politics right now. I mean, we are seeing major corporations ditch their DEI officers. We're seeing the affirmative action program at universities ditched because of the Supreme Court. We're seeing so many things that are backsliding, if you will, from where we had been. So when you're consulting about DEI, are you getting pushback? Or are you really talking to people who are interested in equitable representation in the business and boardroom?
Oh, gosh. Well, this is the thing, Michael. I won't accept work if I feel that it's a check-the-box matter. I just won't do it. I don't have time for that. Who has time for that anymore? Like, really?
Right.
So if an organization or some leadership reaches out to me, we have the initial conversation, and based on those criterion, I'll be able to tell if this is a check the box for them or if this is a serious long-term commitment, because that's what it needs to be. Am I getting pushback? Yes, absolutely, because I don't go in with the let's make everybody feel good mindset. You know, this is, these conversations and this work is not work that we can feel the warm fuzzies about. It's one where we have to be honest about the concerns, honest about what is holding opportunity back, being honest about employees' experience in the workplace, and being willing to accept that data. And if an organization is willing to accept that data, then we're off to a great start. But if not, then I can refer them to others who work in that space.
When you speak about the word data and with regard to DEI, there was several years ago, there was an article in Harvard Business Review that indicated the more diverse your board is, the more diverse your C-suite is, the more likely you are to have a bigger profit margin, up to 30% larger, if you have diversity within your corporation. And the answer, why would that be? Because you're not focusing on just one segment of the population. You're getting a much broader view of who your products or services can reach. I mean, so this is really a business conversation that people should be having.
It is a business conversation. It's a business conversation that I like to dial back into humanity. And the data is correct. You shared that data. And then if your workforce is diverse, then most companies see a 30% increase in innovation, because there's not only diverse people, but there is diversity of thought, diverse ideas, diverse ways of seeing the world, diverse ways of knowing. And so all of that counts. All of that matters. It's only when an organization refuses to change that they get left behind.
Sure. Yeah, and in their marketing efforts, in their sales efforts, all of those things, if you're focused on just one singular group of people, you're missing the boat, because there's a whole bunch of other folks out there that could use your product or service. So why not have decisions made by a very diverse group of individuals? And the proof is there, the data is there, and I keep pounding this drum on a regular basis, and hopefully some people are listening.
We hope so.
I hope
you're listening.
I hope so. All right. Writer, podcaster, consultant, and educator. Okay. I'm listening.
Well, the education is really the core of all of the work I do. So my organization is called Sankofa Literary and Empowerment Group. That's the umbrella under which all of these things fall. So education is the core.
Sure.
We create spaces for lifelong learning that center the literature and scholarship of Black authors. So whether I'm doing consulting work, whether I'm doing the podcast, whether I'm writing books, whether I'm giving a keynote or speaking in front of a board or a community group, education is taking place. And all of that scholarship is rooted in the wisdom of Black people from across the diaspora who did the work in order to find out where we can be better.
And when we talk, this is peeling back the onion quite a bit, right? When we talk about opportunities or success stories among people of color, among the black community, the stories are amazing, but they're not being taught, they're not being talked about. And I suspect I could ask you, you know, many questions about not just why that happens, but about the success of so many individuals who are black, and the contributions to society that they've made are amazing. Why don't we hear more about that?
I think we don't hear more about it, first of all, because our history has been narrated already. And it's widely known. Our history as a collective group of people in America has been narrated and put in a textbook, and that's what's given to teach. And there are a lot of cracks in that sidewalk. The infrastructure is in need of repair, and the only thing that will repair it is the truth. And why don't we hear about it? Because someone doesn't want us to know.
Right.
I mean, even if we focus in on Iowa history concerning black people, right now, 2023, this is such a great time to be alive, Michael.
Yes, it is.
We have in our state the first black judge, female judge, Judge Romanda Belcher, alive today, right now in our midst. We have the first black woman to have a seat on the West Des Moines City Council.
Yes.
Renee Hardman, this is amazing. We have the first black treasurer for Polk County, Iowa.
Mary Wells.
I mean, and the list goes on. We have a number of people living right now who have made black history, and that alone could be a curricula, but there are so many things to fight in order to get something like that to happen. I would point to some resources. We have an amazing resource in the African American Museum of Iowa, which is headquartered in Cedar Rapids. The museum is undergoing a multi-million dollar renovation right now. However, the resources are still available. So those are some resources independent of, you know, looking at society to do the work that regular, average, everyday people could tap into and teach their children. And I think that is the key, is that we have to be willing to teach this on our own and not rely on systems and structures which have historically failed to do so.
You know, I've got to come back to you with several other names that are firsts. Broadlawns, the county hospital here.
Absolutely.
Has its first African-American president and CEO in Tony Coleman. We take a look at the Des Moines public school system. Ian Roberts is, you know, in a fascinating, fascinating conversation that I had with him just the other day. We go out to the Des Moines University, and that college is headed by an African-American woman.
Dr. Angela Franklin.
Yeah. So we are seeing, we're seeing some things take place that up until this year and last year, it wasn't happening. What do you think is the cause of that? What's happening in a major city like Des Moines, or in Cedar Rapids, or in some of the other major cities, Waterloo, for example?
Yeah, Cedar Rapids has its first African-American superintendent as well.
Yep.
We're seeing this in metropolitan areas across our state, larger metros, where there are qualified African-Americans who are assuming leadership positions.
And choosing to come here.
Choosing to come to Iowa. What do you know? I mean, what were we just ranked? Des Moines was just ranked the number one place to live for young professionals.
Right.
Now, there is also, you know, data that says how horrible Iowa is for black people in general. But if you're a young professional, Iowa is not a bad place to land. And I think a lot of these people who are in leadership positions recognize the opportunity that's here. We're a small town on the verge of becoming a big city, Des Moines. And there's the opportunity to make a real substantial difference when the work is done on the ground. And so that's encouraging to see. And I would hope that all of these individuals would make sure to stay connected to the communities that look like them and that they represent and that they work in. Stay connected to those communities. Listen to the people in those communities, because there's valuable insights that are to be gained by simply listening.
I overlooked the new president of Mercy Healthcare, the Mercy College of Nursing.
Dr. Adrian Henry.
Yeah. What a guy he is. You know, we spent some time in Washington, D.C. together, and it was just an amazing, amazing gentleman. Final question for you. While we're talking about so many of these successes, so many of these first steps through education and through cultural advancement, if you will, there are still issues. We just read a report the other day that indicates so many people on the near north side of Des Moines, a stone's throw away from the Greater Des Moines Partnership, that are spending anywhere from 50 to 57% of their income on housing, and working maybe two or three jobs, and so it's still, for rank and file folk, we're still not there.
We're still not there. There's so much work to be done. And we can talk about the reasons why all day long. We could talk about the lingering impact of redlining. We could talk about communities being gentrified and poor people being forced to move to places that are just outrageous and super far away from where they work, if there's work for them at all. We could talk about the lack of job opportunities, people in Polk County who are Black and their ability to read. There are so many people who are functionally illiterate right now in Polk County. There is work to do, and it behooves us, even as we celebrate being the number one place for young professionals to live, we need to look around and see where the deficits are and see who is actually in need, those who are less fortunate, and come to their aid and listen to what they say they need and see what we can do to lift those people up.
You know, you just said the magic word, listen. Quit talking and let's listen. And allies for the cause stand in line to do just that. Abana Imhotep, thank you so much for spending time with me again. It's lovely to see you. You are an amazing woman with an amazing family.
Thank you, Michael. My pleasure being here. Thank you.
Once again, that is the voice of Abana Imhotep. And we will, yes, have links to her website up on the radio blog. We'll also have a place or two where you can pick up her new book. And we think you'll enjoy that as you read it to the kids. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks so very much for joining us. For all of us that put this together each and every day, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator, sales and marketing. Aaron Libby, the voice of the Business News Hour, is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for our good friend, Abana, my name is Michael Libby. Have yourself a great day. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all. Be good to your fellow man. Good day.